Well, in 1967, I was a student at Los Angeles Pierce College, about 15 miles north of Hollywood, California, which is the basically the entertainment capital of the world. And I had an idea one day in the darkroom that I figured if I could photograph some musicians for our college newspaper, that I might get some free albums and get to photograph some of these groups. And the first record company that called me back was Elektra Records in Hollywood, and they asked me if I'd be interested in photographing a group called The Doors. So I had already heard a little bit of The Doors' music, and I liked them, so of course I said yes. And so a few weeks later, I found myself being asked to go to the recording studio where Jim Morrison and The Doors were recording their second album, Strange Days. That was a very interesting experience. Of course, being a young fellow, I was a little nervous, but I just kind of stayed in the background in the studio and took pictures with available light, pushing my ASA of my film so as I'd have enough light to work with at a higher rated speed on the Tri-X film. And lo and behold, my whole role did turn out, and I had some interesting pictures of the guys at work in the studio. And I really caught the bug, you might say, with the music industry from that point on. Went on to photograph a few more groups while I was still in school there, but in 1967 and 68, in that time period in the United States, the government was looking for a few people like me to go to Vietnam. So I sidestepped that issue and joined the Navy and thought I'd be just, working on an aircraft carrier at sea in a dark room. But as it turned out, they liked what I showed them when I went on active duty, and they put me with the Pacific Fleet Combat Camera Group, which was an elite photographic outfit with the U.S. Navy. And so in 1968, late 68, I found myself in Vietnam, photographing the war for the U.S. Navy. And that went on till about January 1970. I was finally out of that period and back in American soil, back in Southern California, where I slowly took up, doing odd jobs with photography again, and pretty soon found myself working full-time for the Valley News, which was a daily paper in the San Fernando Valley, and that went on for about a year. And then in 1972, I started working for Vanguard Commercial Photography, which was, they did publicity photographs and commercial photography for a lot of big-name clients in the Los Angeles area. And it was at that time I decided to get back into maybe the music industry. So the first really big show that I did was January of 73, the Rolling Stones Nicaraguan Benefit Concert. And I got to, get a photo pass set out up front there and photograph Mick Jagger jumping all over stage. And that was actually one of the hardest persons I've ever photographed, because Mick Jagger moved so much. And back in those days, you didn't have an autofocus. You just had to keep focusing, and of course, you had to push the ASA of the film speed a couple of stops to give you a decent f-stop and a shutter speed to capture his movements. So that was very good. It came out great. And from that concert, I gained a lot more, record companies. People started calling me, wanting me to photograph this group and that group. And also in that time period, I made a connection with a company called One Stop Posters, which was a big poster company in the United States. They had really gotten their start a few years earlier with Bruce Lee posters, put them on the map, and in the early 70s they decided they'd like to get into the rock and roll poster market. So they used one of my Mick Jagger pictures from that concert. The posters were 42 by 58, single image. They were really large, so they covered your wall. So, teenagers would start hanging them on their walls in their bedrooms and their ceilings, and before you knew it, I had quite a lot of posters out there. Most of them were selling pretty well. And that went on for a while, and in late 1974, through a contact I had with MCA Universal Records, the lady had, you know, quit her job, and she called me one day. I hadn't heard from her for a while, but she had married a fellow by the name of Jules Malamud, who was the president of the National Association of Recording Merchandisers. This was the biggest group in the recording world, and they had an annual convention where they'd, in fact, it still goes on today, where they, you know, all get together once a year. Well, they hired me to be their photographer, which meant that I had all this extra access to all these recording stars, because they would come to the conventions once a year, and I'd be the sole photographer for NARM, covering all the events. And these groups would play, you know, in the evenings or during the day, and, you know, most of it would be like a convention, business meetings, et cetera, but these recording stars were there on and off stage, so it was quite interesting. And there were key, periods of, that I can remember, like, okay, well, in January of 1973, I was doing some work with a company called Salters and Roskin, who just happened to be the PR people for Led Zeppelin, Paul McCartney, Barbara Streisand, Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas. They were a big-name PR company, and so they had a lot of big-name clients. And one day I got a phone call from them. They said, how would you like to photograph our group Led Zeppelin? And I was told to be at the hotel there on, I think it was a Tuesday evening around 6:30 at the Continental Hyatt House, which we used to call in those days the Continental Riot House because of all the rock bands that stayed there when they were in the Los Angeles area. And I remember when I got there that evening, the first night I met Led Zeppelin, I believe the boys were drinking a bit, and all I really wanted to do was get a group picture of them. And it, that evening it really turned out to be a hard assignment, because I couldn't get all four of the guys to sit together for just a few moments to take some pictures. So eventually I went to the press agent and said, you know, can't we just do something here to get these guys together? And her name is Marcia Hightower, the representative PR rep for Led Zeppelin. And she said, okay, let's give it a try. And we went up to Peter Grant, their manager, and explained to them what I was there for. And Peter Grant bodily picked up Jimmy Page and put him in a chair and told the rest of the guys, you know, in the band to just sit for James's photo session here. We'll just take a few minutes. So that's how that photograph was taken, of Led Zeppelin sitting in the chair. And that picture is really gone to be used multiple times, at least in the American press. It's probably one of my more well-known photographs, along with in June, early June of that year, 1973, I was invited to go up to San Francisco to photograph the Kezar Stadium concert with Led Zeppelin. And, of course, they put me right on stage there, which was the best place to be, of course, to photograph these groups. And that's where I took that picture that went on to be a big seller, of Robert Plant holding that dove in his hand. And believe me, that dove didn't sit in his hand more than about a second or two, and I just was lucky that I was, you know, framed on him at that moment and was focused in and was able to nail that shot. Later, that became a big selling poster. And, well, about 7 or 8 years ago, I got the opportunity to make some prints of that up through a mutual friend. He gave Robert Plant that print, and Robert loves that photograph. That I believe it is in his home in England. He has it on his wall over there. Yeah, I went on to photograph probably around 225 groups, at least individual artists and groups, and continued to do all of that until about 1980, when I just decided I wanted to get out of L.A., and I moved to the East Coast in Virginia. In April of 1975, Paul McCartney was in Los Angeles because he was up for his music for Live and Let Die, the soundtrack to the James Bond movie. And, of course, his publicist called me and wanted me to photograph him at the Beverly Hills Hotel. So I was told to meet the people there at the hotel around noontime during the week. And so I met them. at the parking lot, and you had to, at the Beverly Hills Hotel, when you park your car, you have to walk down these flight of stairs to get down to the lower area where the pool is. So while they were walking ahead of me, I loaded my Rolleiflex 2 1/4 up with some color film and attached the strobe to it, and was ready when we got down there. And Lee Salters, the publicist, was introducing the interviewer with the Los Angeles Times and one or two other people, and then he said, "And this is your photographer, James Fortune." Now, what was neat about that incident was that Paul just instantly went into this Gypsy Rose Lee pose, holding that towel in front of me. And luckily for me that I had pre-focused the camera for about 15 feet in front of me, and I just snapped him. And it's just, I always considered that picture of Paul holding the towel there just one neat experience. Good photograph, I think. My approach to photography really is pretty simple. I'm basically self-taught. I mean, I did take a few classes in college, but always like to just, when I got to do a photo assignment, just take my time, see what developed. Of course, the most important thing is to know your equipment and, you know, to make sure that it's working properly. But my approach basically was just to photograph what was going on in front of me, and from time to time I would ask the person being photographed maybe to do something a little different just for a couple of extra photographs. Like the picture of Gene Simmons and Cher sharing that eclair, I set that picture up by, you know, people were just standing in front of the camera to be photographed, recorded with Cher and Gene Simmons, but I noticed through my side view there that there was somebody was walking around with a plate of chocolate eclair, so I just asked Cher if she would like to feed Gene a chocolate eclair, and that's how that photograph was taken. Ever since the beginning in my college days, I always recognized the importance of the larger format, so I always had a 2 1/4 camera besides the 35 millimeter. In fact, probably close to 80% of the negatives that I own today from that time period, I used a 2 1/4, be it a Rolleiflex or a Hasselblad. And when you transfer your film today to a digital format, it really does show that larger format always shows through.